This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. On September 30th, Congress missed a deadline to pass a measure reauthorizing funds for the nation's community health centers. Federally qualified health centers in Florida provide access to care for more than a million people. Without new federal dollars in 2018, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services estimates that 2,800 center sites across the nation would have to close their doors, eliminating more than 50,000 jobs and access to care for more than 50,000 people. Later this hour, we'll explore how Florida community health centers are coping with this uncertainty as Congress tries to reach some sort of deal to pass funding. But first, inclusivity is a word that has somehow evolved to have a polarizing effect, with some on the far right taking it to mean the exact opposite of the real definition of the word. From the Oxford English Dictionary, inclusivity is an intention or policy of including people who might otherwise be excluded or marginalized, such as those who are handicapped or learning disabled, or racial and sexual minorities. This week, Dr. Sandra Pavelka, the founding director of the Institute for Youth and Justice Studies at FGCU and a professor of public affairs, is hosting a structured conversation about controversial issues. It's called The Climate of Inclusivity, Restorative Dialogue, and it's being held tomorrow in honor of the International Day of Peace and Conflict Resolution. Dr. Pavelka joins us in the studio today to talk about the dialogue and about some of the controversial issues today, which are difficult for people to discuss civilly. Dr. Pavelka, thanks for coming back on the show.
Thank you for having me.
We are talking about an inclusivity dialogue to be held here at FGCU tomorrow. You can join the conversation today by calling 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So first, Dr. Pavelka, these are some interesting times we're experiencing.
Absolutely.
And having a civil conversation about inclusiveness can be made controversial. So why do you think we're at a point now where it's difficult for people with opposing views to even talk to each other?
Well, I think we're in a time where, again, we're very polarized. There's a lot of negativity in society. We're dependent upon technologies, Facebook, and all the different social medias. And if one expresses their opinion, they're automatically attacked. And this shouldn't be the case.
Do you feel that technology, social media, things like that are helping to heighten the tenor because of the anonymity?
Absolutely. Absolutely, I do.
Do you think people are kind of getting ramped up and then working also in a vacuum of information?
Yes. And I think that they're working with sound bites. What is out there, and there's immediacy. I don't think a lot of people think through what they're actually putting on social media. And then once it's out there, and the negativity just is continuous.
And then the reaction to negativity like that is usually defensiveness and more negativity.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So how do you facilitate a conversation like the one you're going to be having tomorrow?
Well, the actual conversation will be held in a restorative circle. We will be in a circle. All the chairs will be in a circle on our library lawn, and I will facilitate the dialogue. We will have a talking piece and have established norms that are based on respect. Everyone will have a chance to talk while they have the talking piece, and it will go around the circle. So everyone will have a chance to talk. They can have as much time as they want. It's not timed. And I'm looking forward to the dialogue with the students.
So you're going to set up the chairs on the lawn. I guess there's not going to be a big table, but it'll be
a big circle.
No
tables. A big circle.
How many people do you think are going to show?
Well, we have it set up for 50, so we can have if we need more chairs, we'll get more chairs.
Will they have a microphone?
Yes.
What if someone's kind of soft-spoken?
Yes, we'll have a microphone, and we will also have it taped.
Okay. So they'll hold the microphone and they'll be able to say what they want to say about whatever subject they want to say. Are you going to set the tone, or is there going to be rebuttal time? It's not a debate.
No, it's just a time to have restorative dialogue. I will have some prompt questions. And some of those questions, of course, may be about the racial incidents. We may go into other questions such as patriotism or security or what have you. But we will have a set of questions in case we need them, yes.
Yeah, to get things rolling in case somebody kind of doesn't want to be the first one to dip their toe in the pool, right?
Absolutely.
Does having a face-to-face conversation like this make it harder for some of that vitriol to come out as it does like in social media? Is it harder for people to get angry about things?
Well, I think this generation, definitely we're seeing that, especially college students, high school students who are, again, so dependent on technology, that this will provide them with the opportunity to express themselves, to have the talking piece. It's almost like a comfort zone where they have the talking piece and they're able to discuss this. I've done work with schools and other and colleges and communities all across the country in restorative dialogue and restorative justice, restorative circles. And so this is a way to be able to bring this to our campus community.
What is the talking piece? Is it like a stick or something that they're
holding? I'm actually using our Azul. We have a squishy Azul that I'm going to use as our talking piece.
Oh, the little eagle?
Yes, the little
stuffed eagle. Sounds great. They'll soften things for sure.
Exactly.
In case it gets thrown across the circle.
Exactly. Well, that's one of the points. You don't want something that can also be, you know, used to hurt someone.
So why do you think it's important for something like this to be happening at a college campus?
Well, that's one of the beauties of college campuses is that we're able to express – we have freedom of expression, freedom of speech, and we're able to have this dialogue. That's one of the beauties of colleges and universities across this country and internationally.
Do you feel like it's kind of a critical time in a person's life when they're growing up? They've gotten out of high school. They now have a little bit more freedom and the ability, like you said, to find that voice.
Oh, absolutely. This is their time. And I'm very engaging in my classes. I see many of my students who at the beginning of the semester, they're very quiet. And then by the end of the semester, we're able to have very constructive, proactive dialogue. And college, this is their time. And this is their time to find their voice.
And it's kind of a reminder of some of the lessons we learned back in preschool. Like I said at the beginning of the show, we learn inclusivity and conflict resolution and not to, you know, hit somebody with the toy that they took from you. Different things. We learned that back in preschool. But this is kind of maybe a refresher course because kids are going to be seeing diversity that they may not have been exposed to before.
Absolutely. And they'll be free to talk and express themselves. And when we're talking about whatever topic so happens to be around the circle at the time.
So do you feel like FGCU has some particular issues to deal with when it comes to inclusivity?
Well, I think that this all stemmed really from the racial incidents that occurred back in the spring. And many, many, not only faculty, students, staff, and community members felt excluded from the conversation when those incidents occurred. And so I think that again, this is something that came out of that, and we're able to provide the opportunity for this dialogue in our session tomorrow.
It's an opportunity for people to talk about how that made them feel, if they feel scared, if they feel offended.
Absolutely, yes.
Or on the other side, if people feel like it wasn't a big deal. There may be people that have that kind of a feeling.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, we've heard many different arguments and positions, so we want to hear from the students, to hear what they have to say and to hear their voice.
So I want to talk about the word inclusivity. Does that mean including even the traditional power centers at the table?
Absolutely. We want everyone at the table. We want the power centers. We want those who feel excluded. We want everyone within at the table or in the circle.
Well, I mean, some people point to the controversial views of white supremacists and say you have to include this viewpoint too. Is that fair?
Yes, absolutely.
You think it's fair? You need to include the more controversial points of view that might feel unsavory for other people at the table?
Yes. Well, under our Bill of Rights, we have the freedom of expression. We have the freedom of speech, freedom to protest peacefully. And so under those freedoms, it is really our right to be able to express ourselves, whether they are controversial or not, or if they're safe.
How do you keep that balance? I mean, if you have somebody that's making statements that are controversial or possibly inflammatory, how, as the facilitator of something like this, are you able to keep that in check? How do you handle that?
Well, again, going back to established norms that we have everyone in the circle will agree upon them. Everyone will have their talking piece at the time when they're able to speak. And we will then as my job as the facilitator will decide if they're out of line, then they may be asked to leave. So I haven't ever experienced that before, and I really don't think that that will happen. But we want to make sure that everyone's kept safe while being able to have this dialogue.
And this week, a controversial figure, Richard Spencer, is coming to Florida. The governor's even declared a state of emergency in advance because of threats from both sides. And we saw how that boiled over in Charlottesville earlier this year. What is going wrong in that type of expression, and how does that differ from an inclusive dialogue?
Well, I think that expression is one-sided, that it's coming from him and his perspective, and it's not being inclusive of other perspectives. That's part of – I think that's part of the problem that we're seeing with that event.
That's why we're having, you know, one person speaking to a group and then they are then protesting back and then they're protesting back. And then it just kind of like on the comments section of social media posts, it just gets worse and it gets more and more angry.
Yes.
In response and then defensive. Of course, the Charlottesville incident, you know, was sparked by the removal of Confederate statues, a debate that's come up throughout the decades. But now we're seeing more action being taken in removing some of these statues and moving them to museums. Do you feel like society, even though it's being dragged along kicking and screaming in some instances, is getting to a point where it's listening to the concerns of minority groups more than it has before?
I do. I think we've made progress. I do think there's still a lot of negativity, a lot of anger there, but I do think we're making progress. But the important point is to be inclusive of everyone's perspective and not just one perspective that's out there.
In what way regarding that?
Well, to look at both points. I mean, especially when you look at the statues, there still is a historical perspective with that, and we have to value our history, but then also know that what has happened wasn't necessarily good and right and in terms of our perspective as a whole.
Kind of coming to terms with things from the past in a different, you know, frame of circumstances, like at a different time with different value systems and everything different.
Yes.
We are talking about inclusivity in a conversation happening tomorrow on FGCU campus, facilitated by Dr. Sandra Pavelka. You can be part of the conversation by giving us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. And I wanted to get back to the inclusivity and exclusivity. Even innocent solidarity among victims is sometimes seen as a threat. And just recently, a social media status update movement swept through Facebook and Twitter with women simply posting Me Too or hashtag Me Too as their status to indicate that they too had been sexually harassed or assaulted. The point being to show just how pervasive the issue of sexual harassment is in our society. It's mostly since the conversation was broken open after the allegations against movie mogul Harry Weinstein went public. The Me Too posts got comments, though, from men saying that they felt excluded from the movement because it focused only on women. Why do you think there are people who feel excluded almost automatically from inclusivity?
That's a really good question. I'm really not sure. In this case, I don't think that social media campaign was excluding men. I think that was just an automatic reaction. We as a society become so reactionary when different perspectives are come out. So I think in terms of our society, we right away we become very defensive, and I don't think that's a very good way to move forward.
Being defensive like that, what does that do to a restorative dialogue?
Well, that shouldn't be part of our restorative dialogue, to be defensive, because we're looking to be open and have their voices heard and not be defending why or why not why I said something or why I didn't say something. So that really shouldn't be part of what we're there for.
It's kind of, though, difficult to not do that because it's sort of a natural human reaction.
Absolutely, it is.
So you just kind of have to squash that down.
Yes.
That's tough to do.
Absolutely. Yes, it is.
I mean, do you give people pointers on how exactly to just kind of to stuff that defensiveness and open your mind a little bit?
Well, that's part of my my discussion at the beginning when I lay out the norms and the guidelines, and we'll talk about that. And I think again, my experiences have always been really positive. So I think that the students will definitely gain and learn from this experience.
So what kinds of issues do you think that the students are going to be coming up with?
Well, the racial incidents will be one of them. Patriotism may be another. This whole dialogue surrounding the taking a knee, the NFL, football, campus security, national security may also be some other topics that we will discuss.
National security in what way, like campus security?
Well, I think there are a number of students who we see we see events on campus, sexual assault. We see campus shootings, et cetera. And this is on the minds of students.
Feeling safe.
Feeling safe.
Right, or feeling threatened. So how does the age and origin of a college student kind of impact their receptiveness to people from other cultures and religions? A lot of times, as we mentioned earlier, college is the first time they're going to encounter diversity. How can that age and where they've come from and what family they came from impact them when they walk into something like this?
Well, all of us have a background. We have we may have some type of prejudice that just comes from where our family is from, or how old our parents or grandparents were, and what decade generation they grew up in. So this is the time for college students to be able to express themselves. And I think this generation, the college student generation and the high school generation coming up, they I don't think are as set on those prejudices as, say, my generation or my mother's generation.
So the kids now that are going to school – I keep calling them kids when they're young adults because I'm feeling like get off my lawn, old person. But the college students today are children of Generation Xers, I would imagine, right? Yeah. How do you feel like the Generation X people had an impact on that lack of the prejudices that may have come in earlier generations?
Yes, I do. I absolutely think that they did, and I think that we will see more, less discriminating events and perspectives as we move forward, because
maybe that racism may be getting bred out and learned out of our younger generations as we continue to move forward.
Yes, I think so.
Can you tell me a little bit about the specifics of the dialogue tomorrow? What time is it going to be?
The dialogue session starts at 6 o'clock. It's on the library lawn on the FGCU main campus.
Make sure to take your bug spray, too.
Yes.
Because that's the time of night when the mosquitoes come out. So it's on the lawn at the main campus there, and it's 6 o'clock. And do you know how long it's going to last?
It will be 6 p.m. to 8 p.m.
Okay. And do people have to pre-register to be there?
No. Just show up. We'll be out on the lawn a little bit early to set up, and it will start at 6 o'clock.
Are people able to attend if they don't plan to talk? Maybe people that are too shy maybe want to listen?
Yes.
So they can just kind of be on the perimeter?
Sure.
So and then you said you're going to be recording it. Is that going to be available?
Yes. Hopefully we'll be able to put that on the website very soon. But we will record it, and it will be available for view.
What website is that?
The FGCU website, probably the American Democracy Project website.
Okay. I just wanted to check because I was trying to find it on the website and I couldn't find it. But we're going to have to leave it there for now. But I want to thank our guest, Dr. Sandra Pavelka. Thanks so much for coming in and talking with
You're
us.
You're welcome. About thank some you for of the having me.
Tough issues, right? Another event taking place this week, Thursday to be specific, is Conflict Resolution Day. Earlier, our producer, Rachel Iacovone, sat down with Charlotte Bingham. She's the coordinator of the International Services Office at FGCU to talk about the events that are planned on campus. And Rachel also talked with Monique McKay from the University Ombuds Office, who helped plan this event.
Before we dive into Conflict Resolution Day events on campus, can we begin discussing how FGCU decided to have an entire day revolving around conflict resolution?
Sure. So initially, we were looking at highlighting International Peace Day, which falls on September 21st. But because of FGCU's closure due to Irma, we had to postpone this event. So at first, the idea came about in light of events that happened on the FGCU campus and all over the nation of, you know, a sense of conflict. And we thought it would be nice to have a day where we focused on peace and unity to kind of bring the spirit back. So instead of that, we decided to postpone it to Conflict Resolution Day, as the day really fit nicely with the theme of peace. So our initial focus on Peace Day was that peace takes work. And so that day is actually highlighted by the UN. And this year's theme for International Peace Day was Together for Peace, Respect, Safety, and Dignity for All. So all the activities revolve around both peace and conflict resolution.
So, Monique, I saw that your degree is in dispute resolution, correct?
Correct. So I have a law degree and I have a master's in law with a focus in dispute resolution.
So this is a topic, of course, that you've been studying and know a lot about.
I hope so. So in my work as ombuds, I do a lot of conflict resolution, obviously. The ombuds office offers services in conflict coaching, mediation, facilitation. I also like to do a lot of proactive work. So I've been working with Charlotte and other departments across campus in a real collaborative effort to bring this, to bring lots of activities on this day, focusing on the values that we want to promote at FGCU. So peace, harmony, unity, all of those good values.
And so we're taught about conflict resolution beginning in preschool. What more do adults really have to learn on this subject?
I think there's always a lot to learn. So we're talking on this day, we're going to do a team building workshop that's really resonated with people. I had about 50 people sign up in an hour and a half. So clearly that's a skill that people want to work on. Everybody can always work on communication skills. We're going to talk about those.
And so, Charlotte, can you tell me, how does that tie into the International Services Office?
Our office really focuses on teaching about global perspectives and connecting different cultures together and educating others about differences and cross-cultural exchanges. So mainly the International Day of Peace, I guess I just kind of wanted to bring that up because of its international focus and theme. And it did fit very nicely with Conflict Resolution Day. I think internationally there are ongoing conflicts. It's nothing new. It's historically there's always been those conflicts. So I think it's just a perfect day for our office and our students to come together and unify and show how you can resolve certain issues despite differences within cultures, backgrounds, ethnicity, or race.
So what kind of events will be going on throughout the day?
We are actually going to kick off with what we call our relaxing activities. So we're going to have two yoga sessions on the library lawn, at one at 9 a.m. and one at 12. We will also have a parade of flags at 10:30. At 1 p.m., students from Enlighten Us will also be providing meditation. Simultaneously, there will be a service opportunity at the food forest that has sustained a lot of damage from Irma.
There's another event that we would love to see students, faculty, staff, and community members at. It's a documentary called Awake, A Dream from Standing Rock, and it's about the Standing Rock Water Protectors movement. So that's a really interesting documentary. We'll do a debriefing exercise after that, and that will be followed by a jazz concert and a poetry reading. We're hoping to have the documentary inspire some poetry about peace and how it is hard work, but also how fulfilling and rewarding it can be.
There is some controversy revolving around Standing Rock. And so for a conflict resolution, how did you guys choose a documentary that may incite some heated debate?
And so I think the debate is fine. I think we're wanting to promote that. We don't expect Conflict Resolution Day to just be the peaceful activities. We understand that it is a lot of hard work to learn about different perspectives, to share those perspectives, and hopefully create some understandings between perspectives. So it's not all about everybody agreeing with one another. It's more really about digging deep into some of these deep-rooted conflicts that people believe passionately about and having and creating more understandings about them.
And while there are conflicts internationally, we wanted to show that there are also conflicts within our nation itself. So our underlying theme, which was peace takes work. So we did want to highlight that even, you know, within the U.S., where we still have some work to do to reach that goal, without forgetting, you know, obviously that peace is, you know, a world goal that we wish to accomplish.
Going international to national to hyper-local, right here there were some incidents of racial and anti-gay slurs that were cropping up across campus. So I wanted to ask, is there any connection to the night before there's going to be the climate of inclusivity, restorative dialogue? I know that's through a different department on campus, but did you guys have any tie-in to this? If it's an inclusivity dialogue followed by Conflict Resolution Day.
Yes, so we purposely did have it tied together. Dr. Pavelka was also in our ongoing conversations on this event. I think ultimately, you know, the goal within those events is to foster inclusivity and unity on campus. Our theme for that day, and we will have T-shirts that Monique designs, is that we all stand for diversity, unity, and peace. So yes, they do tie into each other.
That was coordinator of FGCU's International Services Office, Charlotte Bingham, and Monique McKay from the University Ombuds Office talking about Conflict Resolution Day at FGCU. Coming up, leaders of the community health centers in Florida and around the nation are worried as Congress missed a deadline at the end of September to reauthorize funding. That could put access to primary medical care in jeopardy for millions of people. Just ahead, we explore how community health centers in Florida are preparing, as well as the likelihood that Congress will pass a funding measure before the end of the year. That conversation's just ahead with John Davis. Stay with us. This is Gulf Coast Live on WGCU.